Well, Amy, thank you very much for joining me today. Let's start with yourself. How did you get involved in museums and specifically the Nanaimo Museum?
Well, I went to Vancouver Island University, where I received a Bachelor of Arts in History and English, and also a Bachelor of Education. And while I was a student, I started volunteering at the Nanaimo Museum because that campus was located in is located in Nanaimo. And I volunteered in the education program, delivering school programs. And in the summer, their student positions came up, and like a lot of people, I think in British Columbia that got started in the heritage sector, I really got my foot in through the door as a volunteer and then as a summer student. So I did that for a couple of summers, and then after I graduated, I worked at the BC Forest Discovery Centre, which is a museum in Duncan on Vancouver Island. It's a 100-acre site with an operational railway, so very diverse type of museum environment to work in. And then in 2011, I went back to work at the Nanaimo Museum.
And the history of the collection, how did it come to be? How did it start? And what were some of the transitions and changes in its mandate over the years?
So the Nanaimo Museum is a 1967 centennial museum. And the focus in those early years, in the early 1960s, leading up to actually opening the facility in 1967, was really about amassing objects. So the focus was on the age of objects and also on their condition. So if it appeared to the people evaluating it that it was old and it was in good condition, that met the criteria to come into the museum. Over the years, the way the collection was looked at, of course, has changed. That's reflected the way that museum standards have evolved in Canada and around the world. And in the early, late 1970s, early 80s, the museum had its first professional staff. His name was Barry Hardcastle. And he really started moving in the direction of having the Nanaimo Museum being closer in a line with museum standards in Canada. By the late 1980s, Shelley Harding, who is still at the, she's at the Alberni Valley Museum. She was at the Nanaimo Museum in the late 1980s, and she's the one who really can be credited with focusing the collection more locally and there being a collecting mandate. And since that time, since the early 1990s, we've really been refining our collecting mandate so that it is very, if it could be summed up in one sentence, it would be that the objects that come into our collection have to tell a significant story about Nanaimo's history. So that we really want those objects that they can stand alone and really reflect the history of the community.
In looking at the collection, what are some histories that you feel are underrepresented or are actively, connecting with the community to sort of gather?
There's a number of gaps in the collection, and just for just one of the most blatant ones would really be that there's very little from the 1950s forward. So there's, from a time standpoint, we're really missing a fair bit of Nanaimo's history. We're filling in that in as we go along every year, but our collection's focused a little bit more earlier than the 1960s. When we start looking at stories from the community and the people who are in the community and have been in the community, so that our collection reflects what the experience in the community has been like, one way that we were really fortunate is that in our early years in the 1960s, probably right up through the 1990s, one of our major active collectors was a volunteer at the museum named Ed Lee. And Ed grew up in Nanaimo's Chinatown. He was affectionately known as the mayor of Chinatown. And so he had these really long personal connections with families and individuals and businesses in Chinatown. So he would say, "I know that this family has this object. I'm going to go and ask them if they'll donate it to the museum." So the museum was represented to members of the community based on the trust that they had for Ed Lee. So we have a really, we have a strong Chinese Canadian collection at the museum that goes up to like the 1960s, 1970s. So we're that's something that we're really happy about. But there's a definitely a lack of cultural diversity in the collection. And I think a few places that we would, just to start, because there's a number of places we'd really like to see more representation, it would be great to have artifacts that connect with the Sikh community in Nanaimo. We have a few artifacts that are connected with the Japanese Canadian community in Nanaimo, but it would be nice to be able to tell a fuller story. So those are some places that come to mind right away that we'd like to have more artifacts in our collection.
And what would be a possible strategy to reach out? Is it a matter of connecting with the community, or some of these populations no longer in Nanaimo? What's the thinking around that?
I think it's definitely comes down to that collaboration piece that active collecting where we've identified here are some of the areas that we would like to see more artifacts in the collection, but the next step really is where are the community groups that might have an interest in that story or might be from those communities or, you know, whatever that looks like. Who do we need to go to in the community to start building relationships so that we learn more from the community about what are the types of artifacts they think represent their community and their community's story, so that we can feel like that those collections actually do reflect the community rather than an individual like myself's interpretation of what reflects that community. Mm-hmm. Of course, with Japanese Canadians, that's the same issue that institutions all over the coast have, which is with the forcible removal of Japanese Canadians from the coast and them taking the few belongings they were able to when they were interned, and then the rest being in many cases sold or otherwise disposed of. Mm-hmm. There's that disruption that makes it a bit more challenging to work around, but that doesn't mean that there aren't ways of doing that.
You mentioned this, you touched on this a little bit earlier, of generally a perception of museums being about the past. And of course, a lot of museum practice and institutions in BC are trying to engage the public and talk about, you know, things that are going on in the communities in the present. What are some movements, changes, individuals in the Nanaimo community that you're eager to help gather documentation about at the moment?
Well, very much in this moment, we are doing a COVID collecting project. We've partnered with the Nanaimo Archives, and we have a submission page on the Nanaimo Museum website where we have a list of questions that we ask people, and anyone from the community is welcome to have input. In there is also, do you have a recommendation for an artifact that you think represents this time that we're living in? People can upload photos, they can arrange with us to submit videos or, you know, other things that are difficult to deal with the constraints of our website. And we launched probably about a month and a half ago now, almost 2 months, because we were like, this experience is changing so rapidly. Wow. That we really wanted to be able to get the stories from the people who were ready to share them right now. A piece that's also going along with that is that we're working with the archives to do interviews where we're, you know, able to ask those same questions, but to have that, you know, that one-on-one. We also realized before we launched the website submission page that it's in English, and that is obviously fine for people who feel comfortable expressing themselves in English, but we felt like we needed to include more languages in order to make the submission as encouraging as possible for the community. If people could submit their stories in their own first language or another language they feel more comfortable in than English, that's a win. So we have the staff in-house to translate it into French. We've got a couple of fluent French speakers. And then we weren't sure what were the other languages that we should be having this page translated into. So we contacted the Central Vancouver Island Multicultural Society and asked them, what are the most common languages that you think would benefit people to have this translated? So it's currently with translators at the Central Vancouver Island Multicultural Society, and it's going into Arabic, Korean, Mandarin, and two other languages that are escaping me right now. And so once we've got those all ready, we'll have those live and people can submit in their language that they choose. And then we also will be working on the other end with the Central Vancouver Island Multicultural Society to have the submissions translated into English so that we can keep the English with the original language, just so that we at the museum can read them.
The relationship between the museum and the archives, were they together at some point and then separated, or were they, did they develop in parallel? How did that relationship work out?
We actually started out as one entity, and then in the 1990s, the museum and the archives divided into separate organizations. So today we focus on, at the Nanaimo Museum, collecting 3D objects, and the archives focuses, of course, on paper and other records. And we've got a really good working relationship, so that made it work really well for us to work together, because of our friends at the archives, they spend a lot more time front lines working with researchers, because that's who's coming into the archives. So, and then also the manager of the archives is an archivist, so she was able to really help us focus what those questions would be and have different types of conversations around the ethics of collecting information from people, which is in some ways is a bit different than the types of things we think about when we're bringing objects into the collection. Mm-hmm. So it's been a really good project for us to work on together.
What would you say are the strengths of the Nanaimo Museum?
I think that our strength of our collection is definitely the Chinese Canadian collection. Mm-hmm. And I think that the reason that it's strong is because of Ed Lee, the community member who went out and collected that. To have someone from the community going out and getting artifacts and working with people, it's perfect. You know, like it was great to have him out there doing that. And then when we look at the artifacts, we know that they came into the museum because they were valued by the community who used them and cared for them. Mm-hmm. So that piece, I think, is a real strength in our collection. I think another strength of our collection comes on the other end, which is not just what we're bringing in, but what's leaving. So we have a collection of First Nations cultural belongings at the museum, and quite a few of those come from the Snanaimo First Nation, which is the traditional territory that the museum is on. And we have a memorandum of understanding with the Snanaimo about the cultural belongings. But we have cultural belongings from communities all over British Columbia because of the earlier way that objects were collected, which was, is it old? Is it in good condition? Bring it in. Whereas now we would obviously look a lot differently at, should we bring in cultural belongings, particularly from an area where we aren't. So with thinking about that, we embarked around this time last year on developing a repatriation policy. And the policy is at the point where it's ready to go before the board. So that's an important part of the work that we do in museums, is to also acknowledge that some of the materials and the cultural belongings that came into our collection, they have a place that they should be, that's not where they are right now. And to have that policy framework there, so that if we're approaching communities or if communities are approaching us to see if we have their cultural belongings, that we have procedures in place so that we can respond to those requests respectfully and in a consistent way.
Is there going to be some documentation about that process?
That'll be the next step. So once we get the policy in place and everything's official, then it will be a matter of going back into the collection and figuring out where some of these cultural belongings are from, and then start looking at, do we do a targeted approach? But one of the most important things being that in the meantime, while we're working on that piece, that we have mechanisms in place so that if communities approach us, that we can fast track those and we can deal with them right away while we're still working through what we're going to do with the collections that we have. And, you know, like you're mentioning, like getting in touch with communities and, you know, seeing if they would like them, if they have a place for them, if they would like them transferred to another museum, if they need to be going to a particular family or whatever the circumstances are.
How do you go about planning your exhibitions? Are there any that are on your mind right now or that you'd like to get together on that you're interested about?
We're a pretty small staff. There's about 8 full-time year-round staff, so kind of medium size, I suppose, in BC. And we have a lot of flexibility in how we respond to the community and how we create exhibits. So our exhibit for next summer is called Grow Nanaimo, and we look at the history of farming and land use in Nanaimo, focusing on the plant technologies of this Nanaimo First Nation. So that's a big one that's coming up next summer. We usually end up doing a one in-house per year and one traveling exhibit. That seems to be a good pattern for us for the amount of staff we have in our existing workflow. Yeah. So right now we have a traveling exhibit from Pier 21 in Halifax called Refuge Canada, and it's about the refugee experience in Canada. If all goes well, we have an exhibit from the Royal BC Museum in January or February next year that's called Living Languages, and it's looking at Indigenous languages. And the other one that we've got coming up in-house, which might be 2022 at this point, is called Hulkuminam Art Revitalization. So it's looking at the resurgence of Hulkuminam art, First Nations art in the central Vancouver Island area, and some of the artists who kept that art form going through different points in history where it was very challenging to do so, but also looking at what contemporary artists are doing and, you know, what do they see happening in the future.
With the exhibitions that you plan from in-house, how much of that draws on the collection? How much of that draws on borrowing items from the community? Do you find a kind of mix between the two? What's the nature of them?
Hey, I would say most exhibits end up being a mix of what we have in the collection and loans, either loans from the community or loans from other museums. We have a really great close-knit museum community in British Columbia. So we often borrow from other collections where their stories link up with ours. So that's something that we do pretty regularly. The amount of objects that we have in an exhibit varies. So it's basically each time is a little bit different. Like the farming exhibit that we're doing is lighter on objects and more heavy on interactives. So each one has a bit of a balance. With the Hulkuminam Art Revitalization, most of that will be loans. So loans from private collectors, loans from local artists, and also loans from collections at the Royal BC Museum.
When you're putting together these collections and connecting with the collection, has there been any sort of perspectives towards items in the collection that have surprised you, or have taken on a different direction when you've been doing the research?
I think that for me, a really strong artifact tells a story. Mm-hmm. And so I think that when we're exhibiting objects and they, you know, if we've selected ones that are really speaking to what we've put out on exhibit, the stories that they tell have different layers. And so the members of the community who are experiencing the exhibit interact with the object in different ways and connect with different parts of its story, or can, you know, add more context to the artifact. So that's something that I find really exciting, is just seeing the different ways that people connect. And it's a physical object that just is a thing, but the way that it has such different meaning to people. And one of the best parts of my job is when we bring new artifacts into the collection and working with the donors, who most of the time in our case are our family members. So to be able to talk with someone who has a personal connection either to the artifact or to the person who used the object, and that's, to me, that is the point of collecting, is to have those stories. The object is secondary to the story that it can that it can tell.
5 years out, 10 years out, what are your aspirations for the Nanaimo Museum? Where do you see it in the future?
I think for me, the key is to have more community involvement in what's going on behind the scenes. So when we're talking about wanting to develop the collection, that really is happening with real community input and as part of working on long-term relationships with community members and community groups. It would be great if people came into the museum and they could really see a diverse perspective on Nanaimo's history, and that there were stories that people would connect with that aren't there now, that should be there, and that would make people feel like they're part of the story of Nanaimo's history, when maybe they wouldn't feel that if they came in today, but that we work towards them coming in and feeling that they're reflected in the museum in the way that they think they should be reflected.
Amy, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you very much for getting in touch.